Hello and welcome to The Sound of Economics from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I am Giuseppe Porcaro, Head of Communications at Bruegel, and today we are here for a special installment of the backstage series ahead of the European elections. Joining me today is Guntram Wolf, our director.
Hello.
And Rebecca Christie, visiting fellow at Bruegel.
Always glad to be here, thanks.
So the European elections are coming and they are sending voters to the polls to weigh in on the European Union next leadership slate. For the second time, the European political families have selected lead candidates as the headliners of their campaign. The system, known as Spitzenkandidaten, puts a face on each of the parties, their preferred choice for the position of the European Commission President. It's important to note that it's not an automatic or direct election to the President's post. The job theoretically would go to the political family that will be able to gather enough support in the European Parliament, as well as the European Council, according to treaty provisions. The result is therefore less clear-cut than what might expect. Coalition building and intergovernmental negotiations will play a major role, but the Spitzenkandidaten are there, they are the main face of the campaign, and one of them will eventually get the job if all conditions are met. So to work well, the process should create a balancing act between individual candidates and party platforms. This is something to bear in mind when analyzing the candidates' positions and the overall campaign messaging as part of possible future coalition building and negotiations. At Bruegel, together with the Financial Times, we recently grilled six candidates on economic issues we consider to be the most important for Europe in the 5 years ahead. The candidates that we hosted were Bas Eickhout from the European Green Party, Luis Garicano from the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats for Europe Party, Frans Timmermans of the Party of the European Socialists, Yanis Varoufakis from Democracy in Europe Movement 2025, also known as DiEM25, Manfred Weber from the European People's Party, and Jan Zaradil from the Alliance of Conservatives and Reformists in Europe. I would like to have some quotes from those candidates so that we can get a little bit of a glimpse of which were their positions on three specific topics which we chose and that we deem particularly interesting in this debate. And I would like to start with the issue of European champions. Specifically, we asked the question to the candidates, is EU competition policy working and what would you do differently if you would be, I mean, if they would be elected and then if they would take the job of the President of the European Commission. It's important to note that in the quotes, the order is of appearance is basically the order of appearance in to the stages of our events series. So it's not following a specific other kind of order, but just the order of appearance to our events. And I will give the floors to the Spitzenkandidaten.
What we do need is companies that compete, and in the process of competing, they're investing, they are creating good quality jobs.
Varoufakis.
To create another cartel in Europe is the last thing we need. Cartels are a menace. Cartels cannot handle crisis. To allow existing corporations to consolidate further is to reduce our ambition. We will be able to compete if we have a culture of investment in new technologies. We're falling behind automation. We are falling behind all those things. Why? Because of investment, not because we don't have a sufficiently high concentration ratio in an industry.
The biggest triumph of Europe is competition for policy.
Garicano.
I think the moment you allow states to do quid pro quo, where I let you, this national champion, in exchange, yes, you let me have this national champion, the whole European project is going to disappear. I don't think we can run Europe without that strong COP, without that or the liberal principle that we have the police in the middle, which is competition, authority, very technical, very well run, that actually we all trust. I'm very proud of what Margrethe Vestager has been doing. I think she's a fantastic competition commissioner. However, we need to think very carefully about this digital issue.
In my feeling, Commissioner Vestager did a very good job. She annoyed a lot of people by doing that.
Is that a deal?
She really was trying to create a level playing field for businesses, not to create any national or European champions. She was trying to fight monopolies. If some partly owned or partly state-owned or fully state-owned Chinese companies want to enter European market, they have to behave according our rules and not according their rules. And we have to tell them, look, if you are subsidized from your state, if you just do not play according our rules, you simply cannot enter.
First, very Bas important Eckert. Is that I would criticize one part very big in the German-French proposals, and that's the idea that the national member states can overrule the Commission. I mean, we decided for an internal market for European competition rules, and if then one decision we don't like and immediately we start pushing for overruling that, that's the end of the internal market. That's the end of our competition rules. They are pretty technocratic, the current competition policies. And I do think that also in our competition policies, we have to take more into consideration also the global context.
Do we need another industrial policy? Yes, I think we do.
Timmermans?
But I think it's absolutely wrong to use the Siemens-Alstom case as an example of the need for another industrial policy. Creating an effective monopoly on the European market would have led to most European travelers on trains paying more for their train ticket. And I don't think this was justified. So I think this was an absolutely correct application of the rules. The Commission was extremely thorough in looking at it in all sorts of different ways because there was this enormous pressure. My historic example is always Airbus. Had we not created Airbus at the time, we would all be at the mercy of Boeing now.
We have to understand that competition is already on a global scale, on a global level. And that's why we also have to think about where are our key industries.
Manfred Weber.
And we have to give them the opportunity to establish, let me, real global champions. I want to have more Airbus companies in the European Union who are on a global level, so competitive and so strong. And I don't know whether such establishment of such a big company like Airbus would be possible under today's legislation. I don't know. And what I'm simply asking for is, let's give the Europeans a chance to defend our industries if needed, if we see there an unfair investment behavior behind.
So, here we had the views of the candidates on competition policy. Guntram, first takes, first comments on what you heard back then during the event and the reactions also to this little sum up.
Well, I certainly think the topic has become a major topic in the European policy debate. So this is a big debate, as we just heard. They all had their script. They all had their ideas. And I think Giuseppe, taking the step back, as you also said, this is not just the individuals. I mean, they also represent views of different political directions that are in part also reflected in the electoral program. So for example, the various platforms of the various parties do talk about these issues. And so in that sense, we see already a political differentiation on an important topic ahead of the European election. Now, what I think is perhaps in terms of sort of the substantive positioning is perhaps the most new and noteworthy development is of course the shift in the EPP group in Germany in particular among the Christian Democrats, which is a shift towards more protectionism. Perhaps a more protective policy at the European level. And I would say perhaps something I mean, Jeroen Zettelmeyer of the Peterson Institute phrased it, economic nationalism or European economic nationalism. I think this is basically the new development, and I think the development that is sort of buskulating and changing the scene quite a bit. Now, where this will end, I think is quite unclear, but certainly I think it's clear that it's not so easy to just ditch and change the rules on competition policy. I mean, if one wanted to really give a veto to the council on decisions by the commission, I mean, that would be tremendously difficult to do. One would probably have to change the treaties. It would be politically, I would say, probably quite an impossible task to achieve. So I think it's more at this stage is much more about signaling the direction of what one wants to achieve with competition policy. That's what I hear from these candidates.
Rebecca, do you agree with this?
The EPP decision to push for European champions is a major break in the way Europe has approached competition policy before, saying that it might be justified for European consumers to pay more at the day-to-day level in support of Europe making a bigger impact on the world stage is a big break from the sort of level playing field policies that people have pursued in the past. One thing we saw overall across our debates is an approach to the campaign that reflected where people saw themselves in the party positioning. We saw, for example, that Garicano from ALDE and Zaradil from ECR spoke more or less as individuals, but the other four candidates really spoke in relationship to each other. Franz Timmermans and Manfred Weber played off each other. They spoke of each other by name. They said, if you support the socialists, you're supporting a level playing field, a fair approach to competition, and an emphasis on putting the consumer first, whereas Weber was very clear that he saw his party as the party of trade deals and the party of promoting Europe's competitiveness on the global stage. Then you had Varoufakis and Eickhout positioning themselves as gadflies and as coalition builders. Both Weber and Timmermans spoke about the Greens as an important coalition partner. And then for Varoufakis, he basically said, look, he didn't quite come out and say, I don't expect to win, but he made it clear that he saw his role in the race as more of a gadfly than someone who might end up in one of the top finishers. For Varoufakis to come out and say no more cartels, to use this language of pitting the people against the big corporations, was a statement that pushes back on this idea that corporate strength is the only way to measure Europe's might in the world.
Very interesting. And you mentioned trade as one aspect, and trade is the next topic that we would like to tackle on our review. So let me straight going into our collection of quotes on trade, Trump and China.
We're very worried about trade wars. Trade wars are detrimental to the interests of the planet, of humanity.
Yanis Varoufakis.
But look at the way in which Donald Trump has managed to divide Europe and increasingly to rule over us.
The European Union, and you've put up the graph yourself, has huge negotiating powers because of the strength of our market.
Bas,
at the moment when we are doing international negotiations, where we are very tough in words, and then Trump says boo, one more, and we are immediately backing off. This is, of course, not the credibility that Europe will deserve when you are doing future trade deals, let alone if you start negotiating with China.
But I think the view that
Garicano,
we can ride the Chinese tiger is short-sighted. At the end, the tiger will eat us up. The only way Europe is ever going to be able to demand change in these matters that we're talking about is going to be by standing together with the US.
I think that
Zaradil,
we have to introduce certain mechanisms of control, but on the other hand, China is and has been strategic partner. There was strategic partnership signed between European Union and China back in 2003. We do not take it first and foremost as a geopolitical rival. So I think that we do not need to follow, even if Mr. Trump asked for that.
China is a strong partner on trade, but also on Paris Agreement, climate change, So we have a lot of fields where we are, where we have a common thinking, a lot of problems where we have
Manfred Weber,
a problematic understanding on human rights and so on. But there are also points where we have a common understanding, and that's why yes, partnership, but a level playing field.
But we did reach an agreement,
Timmermans,
with the Chinese, and we do see that the Chinese would also like to maintain WTO rules. So if we maintain the multilateral system and stay on our values, then Europe stays this continent which is attractive to many, many other parts of the world in terms of how we live, in terms of our internal relations, in terms of our values.
So here we are, we are good for another round of comments. Maybe this time I will start with Rebecca instead and ask her for her first reactions to what we just heard.
After listening to all the candidates, I'm struck by how the global trade debate is really framed in terms of three major players: Europe, the US, and China. The range of views spanned everything from taking a very tough approach, not quite as tough as Trump, no one advocated for that, but to taking more of a confrontational approach with China, to really very much cooperating with them, especially in areas related to the climate, and then a middle ground where Europe tries to advocate for itself, but also works with China to defend the multilateral trading system. You heard from Frans Timmermans that working with China might be the best way to shore up the WTO, the World Trade Organization, in the face of a lot of new skepticism from the US. Guntram, what do you think?
Well, I think the most important question in this whole debate is really, how do we define as European Union our relation with the United States? And that relation, the way we define and answer that that relation, is really absolutely fundamental for the future relation between the EU and China. And so what I heard Luis Garicano say was very much sort of the old transatlantic view. We are the West, we stay together, and no matter what, this is our position. And that then defines very clearly a position vis-a-vis China. Now, I also noted that many of the other candidates were much more cautious in making that point. I mean, both Manfred Weber and Timmermans were talking actually quite a bit about issues on which the EU is already cooperating with China, and issues on which, of course, it's also cooperating with the United States. So I really think in this trade conflict, I mean, what we will see in the coming months and years, I mean, the fundamental question will be, how will the EU be squeezed or be positioned in this conflict between these big powers, and will it redefine its relation with the United States from a relation which is extremely close and being essentially a junior partner to one of some degree of independence vis-a-vis the US? Because without that, establishing a strong own China policy will actually be quite complicated. So I think that's the debate we will have in the coming months. And I found it interesting to see that all the candidates were sort of thinking and reflecting about that.
Guntram, do you think that the next European leadership could manage a pivot away from the transatlantic alliance toward a more multipolar world, or toward a more China-centric trade system?
Well, I mean, I think certainly that's the issue that one has to discuss and reflect on now, whether you can manage a pivot. I think that's a big question. But certainly in Sibiu, where I was last week, one of the interesting panels was on Europe's security situation. And one big question was, do we need, as a European Union, we don't need aircraft carriers, but do we need a forum comparable to the decision-making, military decision-making body of NATO that could operate without the United States, that would allow European countries to agree on giving mutual support in case of an aggression on our territory? So these kind of things are really big time discussed at this stage. And so my sense is this will be the big debate of the next 5 years. Now, the full pivot, I think, is probably too early. But this is the question, how much we can advance in that direction in the next 5 years.
The views from the candidates show that the commission will have a real role in positioning how the member states approach this. Some of the stuff like security will remain with the member states. But the central European institutions will have a lot of influence economically that could spill over into all these other arenas.
Absolutely. And in any case, we could speak for ages about the issue of trade. We just had a whole son of the podcast about that, exactly, because this is like bread and butter for the news even of this period. But let me go to our next and final bit of topic, which is classic for macroeconomics in Europe, which is the role of the euro in, and specifically we asked the question to the candidates, what is the role of the euro in bridging the divide between the different parts of the union, and how should the European Union tackle growth and inequality in its member states?
The euro was in the end pointless.
Yanis Varoufakis.
Because the greatest convergence did not happen within the Eurozone. The greatest convergence happened between the successful countries in the Eurozone, like Germany and the Netherlands, and countries like Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic.
A real investment plan that is really helping in getting convergence. This also means, yes, we want to change the rules of our Stability and Growth Pact, because we do feel that there is too little room for investments, especially in economic problematic times.
But once they get to 75 or 78 or 80% of GDP, that extra growth is going
Luis
to come
Garicano.
From the ability to innovate and to invest and to have ideas and appropriate returns from those ideas, etc. That's going to require human capital, it's going to require institutions.
A precondition for a good growth doesn't mean that you necessarily need to be a member of the Eurozone. We are promoting a multi-currency
Jan Zaradil.
Instead of one currency union. So what I would be in favor of would be to legally put all currencies under one legal umbrella, so they would be all made equal.
10 years ago, we had the need as Europeans, as
Manfred
Eurozone,
Weber,
to go to the IMF and to ask the IMF to help us with money and with knowledge. But today, I tell the Europeans, in the future possible crisis times, hopefully they will never come, but if they come, I, as a European politician, I want to be independent from the White House. I want to stand on our own feet.
That for the future of European cohesion policy, we need to establish relationships of redistribution also between these huge urban areas where all the innovation takes place, where the new economy is being very successful, and areas close, relatively close to them, that are suffering because of this.
So, it almost sounds like this is one of the questions that is the most classic dividing lines among the political families are emerging at their best. I mean, at least this is my impression, but I would like to ask Guntram if he agrees with that.
Well, I mean, I think you're right that clearly one sees the different positions in terms of how much risk sharing, redistribution should happen. There's clearly a divide between the more left governments and the more left parties and the more right parties, as one would expect. Now, I think what I found interesting is certainly the remark, we want to be able to do financial assistance programs without the White House. That's the remark by Manfred Weber. So again, that links to our previous discussion. It shows sort of a view that one has to get more independent from the United States. Now, the other issue is, of course, that the more, let's say, non-traditional party representatives were more or less putting a big question mark on the euro as a project as a whole, and you know, I think that's certainly an interesting point of campaign. The question is, I find always the question much more puzzling, even if one had that view. I mean, what does it mean in terms of where we are now. I mean, this sounds very sometimes a bit academic, these kind of points. But what do you think, Rebecca?
I was struck by the near universal acknowledgement that the euro area budget rules need some sort of increased flexibility. None of the candidates had a very clear set of specifics on how that would work, but they all acknowledged the frustration with these budget rules and the frustrations with the way Europe is managing its money. Zahradil was perhaps the least inertial of the candidates. He said it should be possible for countries to drop out of the euro area. He didn't say which ones. He didn't say how that would happen without disruption, but he called for the euro to not be mandatory, which would be a pretty fundamental rethink of the way Europe runs its treaties. On the other side, you had Weber calling for a European Monetary Fund, which is to say for Europe building a fiscal capacity all by itself to both pass judgment, and I think this is key from Weber's party's perspective, to pass judgment on who should get support and then to administer that support, while you had Varoufakis saying, until you centralize the money, you shouldn't centralize any more administration because the power isn't following the chain of decision making. Timmermans was the guy saying, you know, we're going to grow a little slower and we need to live within our means and we need to find a way to do that. And he was the one trying to carve out a middle ground that might be closest to where people are. Guntram, how did you see this balance between the way the rules are, the way the euro is used, and the way they might be going forward?
The balance between the rules?
The rules and Europe's fiscal need.
Well, I mean, I thought not everybody talked about the fiscal rules. So if I remember correctly, but clearly, I mean, I can sense in the overall political debate a certain fatigue also on the euro because the eurozone reform architecture discussion has been with us for a few years. That doesn't mean that it's not important, but I can certainly see that even at a political level, people wonder what can be achieved and what can be actually done beyond a little tweaking here and there. And so I think fundamentally, it seems to me the Eurozone debate remains a core debate and needs to remain a core debate in the coming years, just because the setup as it is currently is not working perfectly well. And so further strengthening that setup is going to be very important. But at the same time, the political level doesn't feel the political support, doesn't feel the immediate urgency to do this. And I'm a little bit worried about this, actually.
It does feel like the goals and the urgency really aren't lining up. As you point out, we did have 90 minutes, more or less, with each candidate. So we were able to talk about a lot more things than we're able to play clips for you here. All those videos are on our website if you want to spend more time with the candidates.
Indeed. And I would say that all this brings us to the end of this episode. And I would like to thank all of you for listening to this installment of the Backstage series of The Sound of Economics. And I would like to thank, obviously, our guests, Rebecca and Guntram. If you are more interested in Bruegel's work and all these positions, as Rebecca said, we have all the recordings of the Spitzenkandidaten events on our website, but also we have an array of blog posts and publication available at our website, www.bruegel.org. I hope you'll join us again. Until next time, bye-bye.